Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And this week, we've watched Nepenthe, and now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
Nothing in life gives me existential angst like Star Trek Picard. The feeling of hopelessness, despair, that there's no point to anything is so strong. Like, you're watching it, and even though this episode wasn't the worst of the worst, I think it's probably one of the better episodes in season one, in a way.
See, I want to say something, but my beer just exploded. So, like, I don't know if it's going to open or not. My beer exploded as you started talking.
A sign of how I'm feeling, a sign of what's going on.
I feel like it's symbolism, you know? That's what the Picard writers would say. That's just symbolism. It's very deep and thoughtful. Give us our Emmy, please.
I remember when this came out, like, just at the beginning of lockdown, right?
So
I remember... In this period, my ex-girlfriend had come to stay. With me the week before lockdown, and before Big Bojo remained indoors, and we all had to remain indoors. So I was to get up every Thursday morning to watch Picard while she shook her head at me. And I remember of all the episodes, this is the only one I watched more than once. And now, having had a couple of years, and watched Picard season two, and come back to this, why did I do that?
Why did I waste time on this? This isn't the worst one. To me, this is like the most.
Oh no, this is definitely not the worst one, but it is. It is the one that I think I have like the most to say about. It's probably the best of season one, but it's the one gives me tonal whiplash in a lot of ways.
I agree with that, but it took me 2 hours to watch this episode. Like, I really just couldn't get through it.
I stopped watching this episode halfway through to have a conversation with various members of the Wargaming Committee club committee I'm on, and I came back to it, and I had no idea what it was, so I had to start again, because it's that, like, totally, like, dissonant.
I refuse it's like, to start it was, again, so I don't
It both
know
wants to be dark and edgy post-9/11 science fiction. But it also wants to be a cute episode of TNG at the same time.
Yep.
So it just does those.
So two anecdotes about this episode. One is that I was watching this with a friend of mine who has sadly since passed away, but he was a huge Star Trek and specifically Next Generation fan, and he was a gay man. And he was really enjoying Picard up up until now, as was I, and because you like I had like some trust that it was all going somewhere worthwhile, which is the same trick that they played on me in Star Trek Picard season two, where I'm like, I'm into this, until about halfway through and you're like, this isn't going anywhere. And you look back at the earlier parts of the season, like, oh, I thought that this was going to be meaningful. Well, nope. But we were watching it, and this was the episode that he was, because he was like, he loved Hugh as a character. And so, like, this is the episode where, like, they killed Hugh in such a terrible way. We'll talk about it when we get further in. But he was legitimately crushed after watching this episode, because he was the one that was like on the train of like, this show is good, I really like it, I'm going to push back against the haters. And then, like, this one happened, and he was just like, I'm really hurt. And it was just really terrible to watch. And then the second thing too, just behind the scenes on this episode too, my favorite part of like behind the scenes on this is like the stuff with Riker and Troi was not even in the original writing of the season. They wrote it during the season.
Okay, so question then. Mm-hmm. One, does that mean that like halfway through this, they just cooled? Actually, you know what? I was going to say, did they just seriously call up Marina Sirtis and Jonathan Frakes and be like, are you guys doing anything right now? They both went, no. But you know what? Neither of them were doing anything, were they?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the story goes like Michael Chabon didn't know that they were going to be able to get them for this, and also Patrick Stewart had been so vehement about like this is not going to be TNG season 8 or whatever, which is now what they're doing in season 3. But whatever.
You know what? That makes sense, because I feel like at some point between Picard 1 and Picard season 2, Patrick Stewart figured out that he should probably have one last leaving do.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the entirety of all, season one and season two, this has all been a long game.
Money Patrick laundering Stewart scheme down.
So they could get to season three. I don't believe anyone who says this wasn't the end goal.
I have a conspiracy theory about season two. So season one, Michael had Michael Chabon. And so like, that's why season one, I think season one is better than season two, because you can see kernels, like the XBs are a cool idea. Like the like Romulans being a diasporan people are like a cool idea. Like there's Michael cool ideas Chapman. In there. Yeah.
Michael Chapman should have really just got Babylon 5 and just made it on his own.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if this had been Babylon 5 and he had to do it in his own universe, he'd have come up with a really interesting show.
Yeah.
But, we don't let people do that anymore, because Hollywood's run by bankers who just want to watch television they watched when they were 12.
Exactly. Just cynical, like what worked before will work again, I guess, without evolving anything. But yeah, there's like interesting ideas in the world building of season one. But my conspiracy theory for season two is Terry Metalis comes in and takes it over. And they had to film season two and season three of Star Trek Picard back to back. So like during the pandemic. So my conspiracy theory is, I don't know if this is true, but they kind of were like, fuck it. We'll just get season two out there. Like throw whatever on the fucking page, because we're really going to focus on season three. So like put all their effort into season three and then just said fuck it to season two and just got something out because they had to do it.
I mean, we've all done that.
I didn't really consider that they were filmed back to back. So now my theories are fully confirmed in my mind, 100% verified.
Yeah, that's my conspiracy. I can't tell you, but my you can clearly tell the energy went to season three. And I just think like season two, they just said like, let's just get someone out there. We'll kill off all these characters that were created in season one that we don't care about. Let's just like, Elnor dies and comes back to life. And Girardi's a Borg now, whatever. We'll just move on, you know?
Guys, if season three isn't good, it's going to break me. If it's been all for nothing, I'm done.
I will tell you stories off mic that I cannot say on the podcast. Ooh. Some behind the scenes stuff.
I'm scared, but I also want to know. But like, we scroll back to these. You know, I know this is now a running gag, but I've had too many drinks. I don't know how to segue. So we're just gonna not
do it,
segue.
Do it.
So Jesse, how'd you get into Star Trek in the first place? In a normal way?
No, God, no, way? Hell no. There's never a normal way. I guess
Olivia, Olivia, you just saw it on Netflix and went, yeah, why not?
Yeah,
this is on. I mean, that's fair. I always love telling my story. I've told it a billion times, but I always love it because it's like understandable but slightly off kilter. Because it is, I guess, normal in the sense that like my dad got me into it, which is like a lot of thing people from my generations like getting into Star Trek stories begin. But it begins like my parents were divorced, so on Fridays my dad would pick me up and drive an hour to his house, and I'd spend the weekend with him and my stepmom and my brother and sister there. And so he would put on audio like CDs or whatever on our drive to his house. And he one day just started playing when I was like 11 or 12, whatever year Star Trek Nemesis came out. He played the Star Trek Nemesis audiobook. And I fell in love with the audiobook version of Star Trek Nemesis. And that was the first Star Trek thing that I ever listened to. And I watched it listened to it over and over and over again. And then my dad bought me Star Trek The Next Generation Season 7 on DVD. So the first episode I saw that I remember is like Descent Part 2. So not even Part 1. So I'm like, I don't know who this Data guy is. I don't know who Lore is. Who are these Borg? Who are Hugh? Like, I don't know anything that's happening, but I love it. So it's like Star Trek Nemesis audiobook, season 7 of TNG, and then I started watching random stuff. I started watching Star Trek Enterprise season 3. It just started week to week, so I got into that, and then that's where I sort of took off. So it's like a weird off-kilter way to get into Star Trek.
Season 3 of Enterprise is kind of a good place to start, at least.
Better than it's less deranged than Nemesis.
Yes, I will say season 3 of Enterprise is it's still got its like big rough patches in that season, but it is infinitely more interesting than seasons 1 and 2 are.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just watching it now, and it's
okay. You know what? I'm gonna reject. You know, I am a season 1 and 2 of Enterprise fan because this is really interesting scene where it introduces all these really interesting alien species and planets we never see again.
Yeah,
which is really great fodder. It's really great fodder for me as a writer, being like, all those people got imperialism out of life. They're going to be like, you see, like, remember when they did that? They did have that Quantum Leap reunion. Yeah, those guys. Yep. Those guys got genocided. Probably.
You
that's what we
like
seen.
To break hearts as a writer, and it's I'm so done. So
it's
done.
It's wonderful.
I get a tax break when I do it. It's fine.
My favorite storylines of Star Trek, because here's the thing, you asked me to be on this podcast, and my initial pitch was actually the episode Cogenitor, but you already did an episode on it. But that would be the one that I like. If I was to pick up all the episodes, they would be that one.
Cogenitor is deranged.
Yes, but one of my favorite things, or least favorite things about that episode, even beyond the non-binary Handmaid's Tale storyline that goes on in that episode, it's literally a non-binary Handmaid's Tale. It's awful. But there's also that side story where it's Reed gets laid.
Oh fuck!
Like,
yeah, he does. Yeah,
which that
he has
story,
sex in the tubes.
Yes, and Malcolm Reed, the security officer guy, British security officer. That storyline is only there. And I've actually I have an interview that'll be coming up on my channel that I did with a gay writer on Star Trek, and he confirmed this to me. That storyline is only there because there were rumors that Malcolm Reed was supposed to be gay that TV Guide started. And so Rick Berman was like, we need to make sure people know he is not gay. So that whole episode, which is co-written by Rick Berman, by the way, that has that storyline where the whole storyline is Reed gets laid by girl, is just to know homo Reed.
Berman, you fucker. It didn't work, yes. Bitch. We all know he's gay.
Yeah. It's hilarious and awful. I mean, it's awful the time. In retrospect, it's kind of funny, but it's like you just had a really no homo him.
Oh, best part
was Malcolm Reed's actor spent the whole time being like, Malcolm's gay. Like, like he was like unequivocally like, yeah, this man is a homosexual. It was like, but it's really funny because he plays really straight in that. But if you've... The actor became famous in England for a show called Desmond's.
Mm-hmm.
About Desmond's is a very... Have you ever watched Desmond's, Olivia?
He was in that?
He's the white guy in Desmond's.
I haven't... I wouldn't know. But I
anyway, so Desmond. For those who don't know, it's a television show about a Guyan and Barbara in London. It's very funny. But he's really fruity in it. And he's really fruity in all of the guest roles in 90s TV. So
he
it's
used
really
to,
funny.
He used to do drag shows, too. The actor used to do drag shows.
Yes.
Hello. Okay. Yeah. I'm warming back to Malcolm. Well, actually, as soon as I think Genevieve first mentioned that Malcolm actually might be gay, I realized his character started making sense and was less intolerable to me. Like it's everything repressed. It's just, you know, he's going through mm-hmm. it. Let him live.
Well, this is incredibly off topic, but
yeah, we're not even on the pent anymore. I made it about Cogenitor anyways.
Well, roll back. So I mean, like, did you have a quitting moment back then?
That I mean, it probably would be Cogenitor. I mean, back when I started, I mean, like, no, I was fairly like all in on Star Trek because I went in on it. But yeah, if I had to pick like an episode that like was my true I quit Star Trek moment, it would be Cogenitor. Because even episodes that now I look back on that I like are problematic, like Prophet and Lace and Deep Space Nine. As a young kid figuring out my like gender and sexuality and all that, it's like I still watch those problematic episodes and be like, yeah, I can still see some good in this, even though they're hella problematic by my standards today. But like Cogenitor is just straight up like it's just awful. It's just terrible. So
it's not even anything interesting happening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the idea of like a sorry, we're talking about Cogenitor now and not Nepenthe, but like, I'll make it quick. But like the idea of a non-binary Handmaid's Tale world would be interesting if you like had empathy for the character, but they don't. They're just like, yeah, and they died by suicide and we'll just make it all about how Trip's a terrible person, even though Trip is kind of right in that situation to a degree. It's just, yeah. And then Archer getting on his high horse and being like, this is all your fault thing. And I'm like, screw you, Archer, go to hell.
has a rough time until he becomes a war criminal in season 3. Trip is being treated unfairly.
When does Trip? Oh yeah. Anyway,
he wants to like murder all the hatchlings at one point. He's
yeah, but those hatchlings. I feel like it's not a. Oh yeah.
They're babies, John.
I mean, I hate to put that hat on. There's less of a war crime, more of a crime against sentient life. There's a distinct difference.
he's awesome.
Still bad.
But back to Picard. No one. Yes. This happens anytime there's an episode or a series we don't really want to discuss. We
talk about anything
on our power to avoid it.
I mean, can we start out? I guess talking about Nepenthe, can we start off with like that opening scene with Jurati? I forgot that this was this episode where it's Jurati getting met by the like Romulan, like the secret underground Romulan lady who's wearing the sunglasses.
That
and I
laughable.
Love. It's hilarious, and you know, I remember like at the time because Michael Chabon would do like Q&As on Instagram after the episodes, And so like people are always like, why did you have the sunglasses on her? It's so weird and dumb. And he's like, well, what does that say to you? And like, you know, because it's like, if you look at the Wikipedia, Vulcans have like good eyesight, but Romulans technically like their eyes like don't adjust well to bright light. So this was clearly like to allude to the fact that she's a Romulan because she's wearing sunglasses outdoors. And you know that that was just like some like the writers of Picard thought they were like big brain people being like, oh, we thought of it. She's going to wear sunglasses. And that's how you say she's a Romulan. Okay. Oh, we're so smart. See,
this is why we have different brains. Because my thought watching that was that's the Pacific coast of Okinawa. So somewhere below Durante are a large number of dead Americans and Japanese soldiers.
Oh god. Yeah,
like Okinawa was the last most brutal battle of the Second World War.
Yeah,
like I'm not gonna describe for you. You know what, if you're the audience, you want to know what happens to the Battle of Okinawa, just Google it. There's like 1,000 documentaries.
I thought you were gonna say hit me up.
Well, don't hit me up. I'm not a Far East historian, but just, you know, go read Hell to Pay or like Ian Toll or something. But it's pretty bad. It just is really weird to me that like,
why did it occur there then? What's going on?
Oh, because Okinawa is the furthest out home island of Japan. So it's the furthest point from Japan that is Japan. And the Americans needed Okinawa so they could then launch bombers from Okinawa to Japan before the actual ground invasion in 1945.
Oh dear.
But they ended up just using Okinawa as a base and dropping the nukes from, because that was quicker.
Christ.
Fun yeah. times. Yeah.
Far East Island hobby campaign. If you thought Picard was depressing, wait till you read about the real one. Anyway, so Jurati's got headphones in this. This is the first time we've seen people play music in headphones in Star Trek.
Is she wearing wireless headphones or that one?
It's got earbuds in of some sort.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I'm fine with that to a degree, because it's like Uhura had the earpiece, which was like a precursor to earbuds. So yeah, so it's like, I don't know, it could be like, I don't mind that as like a piece of world building. I feel like earbuds would still kind of exist in the future, but it's a weird choice. But
Gen Z bring wired headphones back. It's now a trend.
I've always used wired headphones. I hate wireless headphones, but that's me. I always lose
wireless headphones that are wired. Checkmate.
I always lose my wireless headphones, which is why I don't buy them anymore.
Yeah, it's just
what?
But then what? So she does this, the mind meld thing, and Jurati throws up.
Jurati throws up twice. Mind meld? Why was it so violent?
Well, because it's like, it's technically, well, I mean, mind melds have always been violent, which I guess I'm fine with. Like, because it can be very violating, like in Star Trek VI. So it can be a very violating thing. But like, it's also like alluding to what we'll see, like I think next episode or the episode after, where it's like the Jat Vash like women trauma murder spree, like, oh look, we'll see like how AI, I don't even know what's going on. Like, even with the episode ending, it's like, I guess there's like these eldritch horror AI monsters that like exist outside of the galaxy, kind of like Mass Effect, and I guess you learn about them. It's supposed to be like kind of like H.P. Lovecraft eldritch horror nonsense, where it's, you like, know, you, it's on, they're like culty, and you, if you learn about them, you can't be, you can't understand them, so you go mad, sort of thing. It's clearly supposed to be an H.P. Lovecraft-esque kind of story. Again, like the Jat Vash are like a cult, and like they are like calling some unspeakable horror thing, but it's like, it's a weird thing to have in Star Trek. You know,
I mean, when I first watched Picard for the first half, I thought it was going to be like a third man early noir plot, where like the Romulans are kidnapping synthetic people and using them as a slave force, and the whole like synth ban thing was to be like so the Federation wouldn't defend them. But now I realize that was just kind of too interesting a discussion about dehumanization and for them to do.
Did you try and enforce a interesting discussion on Picard? That's never going to happen. We're going to have half-baked ideas. We're going to have PowerPoint presentations of good things that could be in an episode, and that's it. Be satisfied.
That's why I'm so pissed, especially at season 1 of Picard. Season 2 has ideas as well that I think would be interesting, but it executed even worsely, worse, whatever the word is. But season one of Picard, I'm like, there are ideas here that are so interesting. Like the synth ban and like anti-synthetic sentiment is such like, after a terrorist attack is like an interesting concept. But then they just sort of like at the end of the season, it's just like, oh yeah, we know that this like group of synths like almost tried to call down an Eldritch demon monster to like eliminate all life in the galaxy. But you know, we're not gonna have any more bias anymore. We'll lift the synth ban right now. We'll do it like in the background of the episode, like offhanded line. I'm like, what? That could have been, you could have had like a whole season of just like the politics of that, like do a whole like West Wing style Star Trek thing about like the politics of removing the synth ban and like that prejudice. But like, no, we'll just be like, yada yada yada, it's fine.
That would have been their true TNG moment, not just bringing in some previous characters for 10 minutes.
Yeah, but if you, the problem with a descent into, you know, do the Star Trek West Wing show is that you can't do a political show in a sci-fi setting without setting out some kind of politics in writer's room, which is why, like, Andor is both good and not very well picked up by, like, a lot of the, like sci-fi commentators, because the guys who've been writing Andor have been sitting on a bunch of Franz Fanon and anti-colonial literature, as well as a lot of the history books I read for my dissertation. So they know what Andor's, they're writing about. Andor's great on this stuff. You know, it's like
one of the best Star Wars things, period. Not just since Disney kind of, but yeah.
Well, some of us are loyal to one franchise and I've never seen it.
So. You only watched Babylon 5, Olivia. So.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna watch Babylon 5, okay? Tonight. Because you reminded me of how amazing the intro
you know, yeah. Yesterday. You've got to go to the place full of explorers, wanderers, and thieves, wrapped in 2.5 million tons of steel.
Steel.
Sexy.
All alone in the night.
Like, what are they going to do?
But, like, I think that's why we're never actually going to see a West Wing show and why Picard, despite Patrick Stewart's desire to have a political message, didn't have one. Is that Star Trek, I'm going to be quite frank, Star Trek, since the original series, have had a massive issue with being based in any kind of politics. But like, even DS9 has an intense political standpoint per episode, but I don't think it has an overall arcing message.
Yeah, I mean, I'm making a video on it. Like, I think there's an episode, there's a message to be made of like the like. I come at it from like a queer standpoint with Deep Space Nine, and sort of like I see it like the sort of outcasts of society finding a found family and like being able to become like more important than like people would think that they are, like literally like the like hero of the next generation, like tells Sisko at the beginning of this like series where it's just like, ah, screw off, you like be on the station and like earn your redemption, no one will really remember you here. But then like the series is about like actually we're some of the most important people, and so I love it. I like reading Deep Space Nine not just through like a here's the queer metaphors, but like just through like a queer lens as like a as like an ethos, and I think that could be like kind of a political message to it.
I mean, I would classify that as a vital social and moral message. I think Star Trek's always been very good at delivering social, moral messages, whether or not those are political. They are political, you know, I'm not going to actually. They are political, but in the sense of, like, overt politics, the way that something like Andor explicitly sits you down and goes, when you fight a resistance to an imperial power, you're going to end up doing terrible things. And that's just how it works. These are why imperial powers grow. This is why it does this in a way that Star Trek doesn't. And that's why I think Picard also fails in a way, because Stewart clearly wanted a show that did that. You look at how that really, really good interview they do at the beginning with FNN, at the beginning of the show, and the politics of him going to Clancy and Clancy basically going, Starfleet's massively overstretched. You can't just walk in here and do what you want. This is a different world now. And, you know, the discussions around the synth ban. There's obviously this idea of a political message about hope in a time of retrenchment that just gets lost because I don't think people know how to do that in a Star Trek way.
Well, I think it's because, like, there's this inherent tension with, like, the idea of the Federation, where, like, the concept of the Federation was created in the original series, but more solidified in TNG, like, there was a more, like, institutional trust in like America, at least from like the white like dudes writing it, of like the institutions of the United States that were like that it was kind of based on. And like, this is an ideal version. Like, how can you do a kind of power like this in a benevolent way? So like even the Prime Directive as a concept is like this idea of like benevolent colonialization. Like we don't interfere in lesser species or lesser civilizations, you know, less developed civilization, which still has like a reek of like those sort of like imperialist mindsets in it, but like sort of a benevolent way. But then when we get to Picard and like modern, like Star Trek Discovery as well, there's like an inherent more like cynicism towards those institutions, but also like still having to walk this line of like, but it's the future and hopeful. So it like both wants to be critical of like the Federation, but also needs to weirdly uphold it as a positive force and not like not be able to deconstruct it too much. And so like that's sort of like that hard tension that I think it comes up with.
Is that just to serve the fragility of TNG fanboys? Like,
to a degree, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I think it's also, it's even funnier to me because it's also basically a cargo cult understanding of how TOS and TNG treat the Federation, because there's a lot of times in TOS that Kirk is like, these guys don't know what they're doing. Like when it comes to people like Nils Baris or Commissioner Ferris or even Nancy Hedford, it's like all these senior officials, like they don't know what they're doing. Or, you know, when it sometimes like, or the whole thing about in the Cloud Miners with Stratos, where Kirk and Spock, why are these guys even in the Federation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a lot of idea that government is fallible but fixable.
It was more TNG that did, because that was when Gene Roddenberry had to be like, oh, I want to solidify my legacy, so I'm going to make it this utopia. Because like even in the original series, like the idea of the Federation is very nebulous, because like the show is meant to be very episodic and not like taken like as a cohesive continuity really at all. Yeah. So like they reference like the Federation spans the entire galaxy in that show. So like it's a very nebulous concept, whereas TNG is where it's very solidified. Yeah. So like TNG is where it's much more solidified, and that's where it's much more upheld, to the point where like you have like Ronald Reagan literally visiting the set of Next Generation and being like, this is a great show. And like, yeah, so it's like,
I wonder how many times they had to remind him where he was. He probably forgot.
Yeah. So yeah, it was I think that's the tension that like you come up with, because like even I felt it within without spoilers, there's like a Lower Decks episode, and Lower Decks is my favorite Star Trek on right now, but the premiere of season 3 had this whole bit where like they have a trial against the captain, and minor spoiler for that episode, the episode ends with like the system actually working and helping the captain.
Yeah.
And like I remember having an implicit tension with that to a degree, where it was like, I don't necessarily like, I like that the show is like showing that hopeful future of like, oh, the system can work. But then there's also an element of me being like, but speaking to today, I don't trust a system like that to like let like actually work to help a Black woman in a trial like that. And so like it's like a tension with like what is the show critiquing versus what it's hoping us to aspire to. And it's like, oh, I have a implicit like tension with like how the Federation is depicted based out of it being something from the more solidified in the 80s, and then coming into today where I have a much more like cynical mindset about these institutions.
I mean, this is great timing, because that's our last record. We just quit that episode. That was that our first Lower Decks that we've quit. So that will be released the week before this one.
Interesting. Perfect.
Whatever this, yeah, which, yeah, but like I mean, this is the thing, though, is I think the post-Dominion War setting is a really good place to discuss criticisms of the Federation, because it's just fought an existential war. Mm-hmm. All existential wars involve difficult decisions nobody wants to make, and nobody wants to contemplate the effects of until you've won. Because that's just how existential war works, just, you know, ask the Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to have a discussion where you can criticize a government's actions while also still placing it in a utopian ideal, you can do that. You can have Picard have a proper focus on the treatment of synthetics and treatment of Romulan refugees, but instead we get Nepenthe, where we just get a happy clappy episode with the Riker family.
Yeah.
And I do have this to say, which is, I have a reputation on this podcast about hating child actors. John she's great. I love her. She's good at this.
She's great, yeah, except for the fact that
haunting she's so Hill good. House. You can't come for her.
No, she's sure. That's the point I'm making.
She's great. I just find it uncomfortable that we're introduced to her in like I know it's alien stuff, but it's like, let's have her dressed in like faux indigenous like costumes.
Yeah.
Like,
but it was I think that might be a cultural thing, because I just always thought it was very Tolkien-esque.
I think so too, but like that might be the case. It's one of those, like, I'm not gonna sit here. It's not for me to be the one to sit here and like yell about it. For me, I'm just sitting here as like a white person being like, I feel uncomfortable, and I'm not entirely sure I don't trust these Star Trek Picard writers to have like self-analyzed that enough. You know what I mean?
I mean it's really weird.
It was vague enough that it was noticeable, but
it's
almost like, you know how masks to me isn't racist because it's such a vague amalgamation of cultures.
Yeah,
it's like that.
I mean, the thing is if they hadn't had the face paint, we probably wouldn't have.
Yeah,
thought about
I think it would be like a Robin Hood esque sort of thing. I think it's the face paint that is just it's like one of those, like, is it the worst thing in the world? It's no. Is it the worst thing in this episode? No. It's just one of those, like, I don't trust the writers to have been self-critical enough to like get away with that. You know?
I mean, you're only thinking about it because you already don't trust them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's okay because they fucked up in worse ways the same episode.
It's like,
oh, yes.
It's like I don't think about how bad A Private Little War is because I like A Private Little War.
Yeah.
But I don't like Picard, so I'm suspicious of this.
Yes. And I just love it. Like again, the stuff with like Riker and Troy is like decently fine. There's some stuff in there that I could go off on, but like, I'm here for Riker making pizza, like, I'm down for that. But it's like juxtaposed with like, let's go to this Borg cube where we have our clearly coded queer metaphor / marginalized metaphor going on here, and we'll just like have them be mass murdered. Let's just traumatize Hugh. Let's just kill off
it.
Yeah,
let's bring back the incest siblings.
Yeah, the incest
what the
siblings.
Fuck with the incest siblings?
Yeah, well, they're trying to Game of Thrones it.
I couldn't believe that that's how Hugh went out. I knew it was bad, but I'd obviously never rewatched it because I love myself.
It's so bad that friend of the podcast, Hi, wrote a book.
Yes.
To redeem it.
Yeah, it's great. Which you should all read. It's great. Through the Eye of the Needle. It's fantastic. It's just like it. So you have this nice little heteronormative family structure with Troy and Riker and their two kids / one of them's dead because we got to have everyone have trauma in this show. But you have this nice little heteronormative family structure with their cabin in the woods, and it's all sweet and nice based off of like characters created in the 80s. So boomer stuff. And then again, loving Riker, adore him. He's fantastic. One of my favorite characters in all of Star Trek. But then you juxtapose that with like, let's have this gay metaphor character played by gay actor who is made note of the fact that he played the character originally back in the 1980s as an HIV metaphor for one of his friends who died from AIDS. So he like based Hugh off of that, like a friend who died from AIDS in the AIDS crisis and a gay man. And then let's just like murder him casually because he peeks his head around a fucking like wall at the wrong moment and not even is part of like the fight. Like, he's just like,
give him a heroic death.
Yeah, no, he's just like, what's going on here? And then kill him. And then also just a little bit of craft note too that always bugs me. If you pause that scene where he peeks his head around the corner, you can see the knife that goes through his neck already there. So like it's a continuity error because like they must have just forgotten to take the knife out when they filmed that shot.
You know what? I feel really bad. No, sorry, Anthony, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking they're busy already thinking about season 3. I'm so bitter. I'm so bitter. Like, I really, really trusted them, and I'm just salty about it, I'll be honest. But I think New Trek has a real, like, it's unsalvageable. They have a real problem with killing the gays. I don't care how they resolve it. I don't care that they resurrect some of them. It's a real problem. I don't know what's going on.
Also,
I will defend Discovery to a degree on that, because this is my defense. They why am I blanking on the showrunner for Discovery right now? Her name, lesbian lady, I'm blanking on her name off the top of my head.
Katrina.
Yeah, no, I figured her name out for some reason. I'm blanking on her name, but anyways, Discovery season 1 had completely different showrunners. They were apparently assholes. And that's why the two of them got fired, beyond Alex Kurtzman. And then they hired a lesbian woman to be the showrunner of Discovery. And that's when you see Michelle Paradise. Thank you. And so like she comes in season two. That's where you see Hugh come back. That's where you see literally all of this queer explosion of characters. Now we have like a non-binary character, a trans character, a lesbian, two gay men. And so it's like, and then like some other coded lesbian characters as well, even though they aren't explicit, but it's referenced heavily. So like I will give Discovery somewhat of a pass past season two, because you have a lesbian woman coming in here and being like, all right, let's actually do the work to try to listen to these communities that are pissed off at that and like try to rectify some of this shit. So season one of Discovery, I will put the blame entirely on those cast members. Season two, I'll be like Michelle Paradise and I believe Olusun Osunsami, I believe is his name. I'm probably mispronouncing, but he is one of the producers as well. He also does a lot of work to make sure that the casting is diverse and like the characters are diverse. So like all the credit to Discovery season two onwards for I think doing that pretty well.
I didn't even realize that showrunner was lesbian, but the mm-hmm. fact is, I know the Star Trek lesbians are so mad that there hasn't been an explicit character that just says that they're lesbian, and they deserve a representation.
They do.
Even the bisexuals, we had the bullshit representation in the Mirror Universe.
We did also get like Mariner saying it.
Yes, we did get Mariner saying it eventually. But yeah, that kind of makes it more disappointing in a way, but I guess we have time.
I just don't have faith with the writers or the franchise runners to take Discovery seriously anymore now that Strange New Worlds is such a rolling success. I don't even blame Strange New Worlds for it. It was just deeply inevitable once you went back and did the original series that way.
Yeah, no, I know. It's unfortunate because like Discovery got saddled with all the like what frustrates me is Picard gets propped up because it's like based on 80s stuff, like to bring it back to Picard. Picard gets propped up as a like prestige series, right? Like it's the one that they're like, we can win all the Emmys with this show. Like that, you know what that's what they're going after, like especially in season two, but even in this season, it's like we're gonna win all the Emmys with the show. It's so smart, we're so big brain, we'd hire a novelist to write this shit.
How'd that go for you, dickheads?
Yeah, right. But like they still see Picard as like their prestige show. And then you have like Strange New Worlds is the one that like, yeah, we're like appeasing the like mainstream pop culture that doesn't want anything new. They just want the same thing regurgitated to them. And again, I like Strange New Worlds. I think it's really like decently good. But like it's got that like momentum on it because everyone sort of like goes like, this is what Star Trek should have been from the beginning. And then I look at Discovery and I think like it has a lot of problems. But like it done a lot of the work in my mind to like try to like do a lot of like this pushing forward of what this stuff can be, and it just gets flat ignored. And it's and then Discovery people you know people all will of blame. The energy.
Like it took like the big hit of hate and it ground it down and convinced everybody that actually Star Trek could be on TV again.
Because I remember when I started watching Star Trek, which was only in 2018. Sorry, I was gonna watch it all sort of chronologically, like in order of release. I was never going to watch Discovery, but the worst, most annoying pricks were complaining about Discovery. They forced me to change my watch schedule and start watching Discovery. I wouldn't have watched it to this day because I'm still not finished.
Well, yeah, but what's frustrating me is you know people are going to like look at like Discovery as like a general failure, which it's not. It's done decently well for everybody, but like people are going to look at it as a failure, and then there's going to be the neckbeard chuds who are going to be like, oh, well, it's because it was woke, and look at it, and I'm like, like Discovery has problems, and I can tell you what their problems are on numerous levels, stemming from its need to like blockbusterize Star Trek. But like it has a lot of good in it, and its problems are not from its diversity. It's one of its benefits, I think. But
oh yeah, absolutely.
No, the diversity of writing and the diversity of casting is the immense benefit of Discovery, and you can see that literally in how they cast the main cast and the supporting cast of Strange New Worlds. Like if they'd done a Pike show in 2011, it would not look like that.
Yeah, we'd be mostly white dudes, and then we'd have like we recast Uhura, so we have our diversity points. Like way to like make it and they like, would... just like the 1960s, folks.
Yeah. I hate the early 2000s and the late and the early 2010s. They're just bad times.
Really the 2020s too. I'm just
I don't know.
I was gonna say it's not Tory really great anyway.
The Tory party's about to fall apart. That's gonna be fun.
Sitting as an American watching that whole thing go down, I'm like, I can't judge, but wow.
The best part of this is, as I explained to Olivia before the episode, this is a system working perfectly and a fundamental proof that the British public are somewhat to be trusted.
Yeah, that's good.
Because it's a weird, it's weird. Anyway, that's not Star Trek. Let's go back to something that fundamentally can't be trusted. Picard.
Yes. What else going on in this Nepenthe episode? I'm trying to remember. I mean, there's like this weird discussion where like Picard comes up to Soji, like where like Soji's like having this existential crisis about like, am I real? Because I learned I'm an android. And like, I do like Picard being like, you are like the beginning episode, be like, you are real. You are a full person. Like, just because you're not like biological, like organic, then you're that you doesn't mean you're not real. And I like that. But then like, he like, she's like having this existential crisis with Troy, who's like talking about her child dying or whatever. And then like Picard comes up and does this like passive aggressive bullshit at her where he's just like, oh yeah, we all like, we really hate you. You should have all just like killed us or whatever. And then like, she like hits him passive aggressively. It's like, what the fuck, Picard? What was that passive aggressive?
Yeah, it's really out of, it's incredibly out of character for Picard as well.
Yeah.
Like, you get that he's basically being like, don't you understand how ridiculous you sound? But he would never, it feels really weird. Like, it's just a really out of character line.
Because it's like, he's not wrong. It's like, he's pointing out like how ridiculous it is. Like, I am, he's trying to point out like, I am here to help you. But like, to do it in such a like passive aggressive way is, like you said, out of character, and like,
it's clearly dismissive.
It's clearly there to get her to be at odds with him and not trust him, so that then Troy can call him out. It's like one of those moments where it's like, I like what it does. You can clearly see that the writers wanted to have Troy have this moment of like, Picard, you suck, get it together. But they need to force him to like do something out of character to do that.
They don't, but I don't, yeah, it's really weird. They felt they had to do, felt they had to make him be something out of character, and there wasn't, because what he was already doing was enough for her to not trust her. Because she's already said that you guys are being nice to me, so I don't trust you.
Which is what, like, which again, like, makes sense for her because of after what happened with incest sibling Narek, dude. He was nice to her to get her to trust him. So like, she's got like this, like, set aside Narek as a character, like, she is a, Soji at least has reason to be distrustful of people being nice to her. Like, it's, she was just in a very abusive gaslighting relationship.
I forgot about that relationship until just now.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my boyfriend who I was having sex with, who is also having like weird incest vibes with his sister, like tried to murder me not less than a day ago. So I get to have her having trust issues. You didn't need to like really force it.
Yeah. She's doing the best of what she's working with.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, we also forgot that like Jurati tries to die by suicide this episode too.
Oh yeah, and they do. If I had a nickel for every time Picard season 2 showed a suicide up, Picard just suicide up close, I'd have 2 nickels.
Yeah, and like surprise us with it.
Yeah,
but it's also like, why did they show? They could have just done it off camera. It's what you said, Jesse. It's that prestige television thing.
Yeah, it's the 13 Reasons Why. Like, we're being so deep. Look at this. We're gonna win our Emmy with this. That people are. It's the same thing where like people think that they are being deep because they're showing trauma and darkness. It's like why like Oscars go to like Holocaust films all the time. You know, like, not to say like we shouldn't have Holocaust films and that there shouldn't be things made about that time period, because there should be. But like, it's just like this trauma porn that like wins awards that like I think Picard season 1 was just like going after, because like, look, we're gonna have a character try to commit suicide, or sorry, excuse my language, die by suicide. And that'll be so deep, and people be like, wow, Picard's really tackling the issues, man. And we'll get our Emmy for that. And then next episode, it's gonna be, we're gonna have our Rios just be all depressed because his captain, because this is the very next episode, is like his captain also died by suicide, because he murdered children. Like, this is, oh yeah, this is Picard, you know. This is deep Trek.
I really have a problem with Jurati's character, and I'm honestly apologetic for it, but she's such a liability from day one.
It's also a really, it's really annoying waste of Alison Pill.
Yeah. So if you watch her in, what is the other show that she was in that the same year this came out that was fantastic? It starred, I'm going to look it up because it's one of my favorite shows and I'm blank. Devs. If you have not seen Devs, legitimately one of the best shows I've ever seen, and Allison Pill is fantastic. And it's an eight episode miniseries, and it's so good. And she was in it in the same year that this came out.
I don't want to say anything too harsh to her because it's just the writing, really.
Yeah. To give a point, I guess, to Picard season two, I like her better in the beginning of that, like pre the Borg Queen nonsense. I do like her characterization being a little bit more upbeat and like kind of like quirky scientist. I think that like as tropey as it is, it like is a little bit better fit and more fun for Allison Pill to play and to watch her play. Mm-hmm. I guess that's like a point I can give season two of Star Trek Picard, that they like characterize her slightly better at the top.
As I was watching this, I just realized how insane it is that she goes from, it made season two worse for me, that she goes from this to then colonizing people's minds with her Borg girlfriend.
What do they mean? Sexual assimilation, what does that mean? That's like,
she's a victim.
That's like when they conversion therapy illegal here, but they said it's okay if it's consensual. And everyone who knew anything about therapy was like, what does that mean? And the government was basically forced to admit they were just leaving a massive loophole in the conversion therapy ban.
It's a huge just, what the fuck are you talking about?
There's a whole season there of like, you need to have high and to have that talk. And I'm sure you had a great conversation about season two. It's like there's a whole season of television in just the idea of exploring a new version of the Borg. But like they just sort of went that. Over it in that. Yeah, they're not going to do that. Again, it's the same thing we see here with the XBs. It's this episode in Nepenthe. It's just like, let's just have them all get in a lineup and like murder them in front of Hugh, who like cries over their body, and then we kill him this episode. It's just, and what also frustrates me too is like there's implied friendship between him and Seven of Nine, and like Seven of Nine's arc at the end of this season is her like having a chip on her shoulder because of Hugh's death, which by the way Picard doesn't seem to really give a shit about after like having met him, despite him having an emotional connection to him more than we've seen. Like Picard has an on-screen prior emotional relationship with Hugh in TNG that is actually beautifully portrayed in the episode prior to this where he's with you. Like the moment where the two of them hug is so good. It's one of the few like bright spots in this season of television. I love all the scenes between Picard and Hugh are fantastic, and I adore them for them. Like I think they're actually really good. And then he gets murdered in this episode, never meets Seven of Nine, who like they imply to have a friendship with and would make sense considering they're both ex-Borg. And like she kind of works outside the system as well, like Hugh does. But like we never see them on screen together. She shows up after the fact. But yet her whole arc at the end of the season rests upon her like saving Hugh by she kills incest Romulan sister, and says, this is for Hugh. And it's like that we feel nothing because we've never seen her had any prior on-screen relationship with him. And yet Picard, who does have that on-screen relationship and actually has the best moments of the season with Hugh, seems to not give a shit after that episode.
They just don't have the time. It's like they don't have the time to make anyone care. Everyone's just, I mean,
That's it. That's the tweet. They don't have time to make
any. I'm actually like despairing because I'm thinking now, like maybe it's a fucking godsend that they fucked off to do season 8 of TNG. Because what were they gonna do with our beloved characters? Eleanor probably would have died anyway.
Yeah, I mean he did die in season 2 and came and they just like came back. And
what's the point of that?
I know. Can I at least plug something? The best thing that I can say about Star Trek Picard that has come out of it is I will argue for the peripheral, and this is like a case of a lot of like stuff, but like the peripheral material, the beta canon stuff out of Star Trek Picard is actually some of the best Star Trek content that I think exists in like modern Star Trek today. Like if you haven't read it, go read, there are 4 Star Trek Picard novels.
They're good.
They're excellent, especially the 2 by Una McCormick. The most recent one by Una McCormick, set between seasons 1 and 2, is one of the best sci-fi books I have read not only like tie-in fiction, but like science fiction novels, period. It is such a great look at like restorative justice after like imperialist and colonialist like histories and genocides and things like that. And it's told in such a really beautiful way. And I would highly recommend that book. It's called Second Self. And it actually uses, I got into this because like it actually uses Elnor to a great effect in that episode or in that book. So if you have not read it, go read it. It is so good. All of the Purple Star Trek Picard material is really, really good. There's even a audio drama written by one of the Star Trek Picard writers, Kirsten Byers. She's one of the executive producers. There's an audio drama set between seasons 1 and 2 that's about Raffi and 7 of 9 that actually features Jeri Ryan and Michelle Hurd reprising the roles in the audio drama. And it is really good. The story is actually really interesting. It dives into 7 of 9 psychology really well. And also at the top features just a 10-minute date between Raffi and 7 in her little like RV like house thing. That's actually really cute. Yeah. So I'd recommend it if you have not listened to it. It's really, really good.
I think I just have to accept that that's how Picard will be of value to me. All these little little gifts it's giving us. Actually, gifts is actually too strong.
The things that people manage to salvage it around us. Yeah.
That other people have filled.
It's incredible that like, you know, the absolute best part of all science fiction is that it is an incredible boon for creators and individuals who want to spin off it on their own ideas. But if the only success you have on your show is, well, it made other people write better things, you fucked up. Like if you make if you cook dinner for a group of people and then you ask them how it was and they go, oh, well, we all decided to make our own version of it and we all preferred more. You fucked up.
We like we ate your dinner and thought it was so bad that we went and made our own. Like we like just thought we'd use your tools and like
Well, we liked your risotto, but we decided that instead of piss water, we'd use white wine instead. Look how great it was. It's like, no. Fuck you.
Imagining that peep show dinner. If you didn't add the beans and the lettuce, God, yes, it would have been fine.
it's cooking with Terry. That's what it is.
Oh my God, beautiful. I just feel bad because like this season of Picard, at least like season 2 of Picard, God, frustrating stuff. This season of Picard, like there's such good concepts. I really do like the idea of the XBs. I like the idea of the synth fan. I like the idea of the diaspora Romulan people. That eventually gets resolved really interestingly in Discovery, because you see them come together with the Vulcans and Navarre. So there's like a really good arc there of like that you could really flesh out of like, oh, the Romulans only able to reunify with Vulcans because they became a diaspora people. And so that like sort of opened them up to like being more able to like have that conversation, which is such an interesting thing that you could explore and like the problems and conflicts that come out of that. Because I'm sure there'd be different factions of Romulans that have different views on it. So like there's such good ideas to explore here that they just throw away in terms of their like blockbuster trauma porn Emmy trying to get plot. It's just frustrating.
They knew. This is what I'm saying. They knew they didn't have the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise they would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's also a failure, the fact that the seasons are so short is that you've got an hour to get do your sort of early season teasing problems. And it took TNG 22 episodes to get out of that the danger zone, really.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it takes most television shows around 20 shows. You can't give them
that much leeway. Sorry.
No, I think it's a failure, which is that when you're writing prestige television, you should be able to perform better. You can't go, I'm going to have a punt at this episode and hope it works, or I'm going to mash 2 episodes together and hope it works. You have to deliver.
Well, and it's perfectly possible. Code of Honor era. I'm sorry. Like, we're not doing that anymore.
The mindset that I think is what is a detriment to Picard and Discovery, I think especially. Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, and Prodigy escape this because they're not the like leading shows. But the problem that I think dogs both those shows, and I think it stems from, and I'm not hating on Alex Kurtzman because there's like a lot of vile thrown at that man. It's like my view on Alex Kurtzman is like, I don't think he's the best person to run Star Trek. I think he is the best person that has run Star Trek. He is better than Rick Berman and arguably better than Gene Roddenberry in my eyes. But I still like I don't think he's perfect by any means. But I think the problem that comes out of Discovery and Picard is that it comes out of that mindset that I think Alex Kurtzman brought to it, which is, oh, let's film this like a blockbuster movie. And because of that, it brings in the need to like have heightened stakes, tell these long arc stories that like need to all constantly be paced out like a movie, but then that doesn't fit over 10 hours. Like it's paced out like a movie over 10 hours instead of it being like each individual episode is seen as its own cohesive unit that adds into the whole. And so then it leads to like the end of every season of Discovery and Picard being like, and the universe is gonna end and everyone's gonna die. We're gonna have a billion Romulan ships. Like the thing that just blows my mind, like everyone's like the thing that people complain at the end of season Picard, season one, is like everyone's like, oh, the copy and paste fleet of Starfleet ships, so they all kind of look the same. And I'm like, that is such a surface level complaint to me. Because like, yeah, I get it. It's like, I get it. It's like but the VFX team had very little time to do it. I can get them go with that. My problem is the fact that like, where the fuck does this, like the Romulans, who are, we are shown repeatedly throughout the season, are like a people that have been like destroyed, have a billion ships, and then Starfleet has a billion ships in response, more ships than we have ever seen Starfleet ever have at any time ever, just show up willy-nilly.
You can just do three ships.
Yeah,
it's fine. In fact,
you know, it's better.
Like 9 out of 10 times is any sort of naval confrontation in the real world, it's like one ship, maybe two.
Yeah.
Especially right out. It's like imagine, like, it's not the fucking Battle of Jutland, guys. It's not Midway.
Yeah.
You're putting the entire fucking fleet.
Yeah, and it makes it less interesting.
Some suits told them they need to add a couple more ships.
Oh, no, they absolutely got told.
Oh, no, it's just some weird formula.
Well, it's just, it goes to like, it needs to be the blockbuster ending. So the blockbuster ending needs to require that everything is at stake. Everything is at stake. So it needs to be a billion ships.
I bet that there were like 3 or 4 Romulans and 3 or 4 Starfleet ships in the like original final pitch. And some producer went, you know what? We need more ships. We need more ships. You know, Game of Thrones, they had so much crap in the finale. We want lots of ships. And the VFX guy just sort of looked at him like he just wanted to jump off a cliff and ship himself. And he just went, yeah, boss, sure. And then sure. Went outside and screamed.
Like, yeah.
Because like, you look, even the scripting of that, it's sort of like, you only see one ship. They talk about, like, Jonathan Frakes' scenes and that were literally shot on 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, because it was originally supposed to be the Admiral says fuck off Picard in episode 3. They originally shot it with her. Yeah, and then they recast it as Frakes is like, well, we got Jonathan Frakes here, might as well use him instead.
Oh god,
he's not anything.
Yeah, it's which is funny.
Nepotism series,
which makes more honestly, that makes more sense than the CNC of Starfleet getting out from behind a desk.
I actually disagree, because like, why would, like, Riker is shown to like be like retired, so like why would he like be that person? Like the CNC of Starfleet makes mildly more sense to me, especially if like you had built up like a storyline of her like being like Picard fuck off, and then like if you had like a few scenes with her being like, actually, my coworker, this Romulan lady who likes to wear sunglasses, is actually really suspicious. Maybe I should look into it. And then she shows up. Like, if you have a couple scenes of that, then you'd have to pay it off. But they'd actually be a good payoff and make more sense than Riker. And then also wouldn't undercut the other series. And I know this is because the series don't talk to each other, especially didn't at the time. But, like, wouldn't undercut Lower Decks' finale, which also had Riker showing up to save everybody.
I mean, my solution, because I'm a writer who hates continuity, would just be to make up a captain.
Mm-hmm.
Or just have somebody, like, have it be like, well, Sonia Gomez or something.
Like, have a character that we know. Just if you want to have your, like, nice little cameo, it would be fun to be, like, Ezra Dex or Sonia Gomez. Or, like, just like, oh, hey, look, you know?
Please, anyone from DS9. I'm sick of the TNG references. I'm over
it. Oh, well, the fundamental fact is that these guys... something must have happened with Ira Stephen Burr, where Ira Stephen Burr won't give them the rights to shit.
No. The answer is that DS9 was the lowest rated show, and even though it is well considered by Trekkies, the big brain studio people don't see Deep Space Nine as like a thing worth propping up a big franchise around, which is why they'll have like Janeway and Prodigy and be teasing this Janeway show that they're saying, which again, I love Janeway, and I actually really like Prodigy. I actually think Prodigy is one of my favorite like Star Trek things on right now, but like she gets to be in a show because like Voyager was the flagship show at the time. but and TNG gets to like have this resurrection because it was like the best Star Trek show or the best rated Star Trek show. But Deep Space Nine just gets forgotten because it was the redheaded stepchild of the franchise.
Even now, DS9 is the show that only has a presence within the Trek community.
That's so upsetting.
It well, it's like, what was it? Almari literally said, referred to it as Service Station 9 to us.
Oh, well, Almari and I are now enemies, and I'll put that on the record. let's start a feud with Almari. It's time.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Wait, on it, no, I'll say it to his face in the Strange New Worlds episode.
No, let's not. Let's not.
But when did I actually end up watching Deep Space Nine in my watch? I hadn't heard of it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I had at least heard of TNG when I stumbled on TOS randomly on Netflix one day. So that does make sense before my Trekkie era.
Yeah, it's the best one. It's the best one, but it's the honestly, I think it was and still is the best Star Trek show. But it will get like Lower Decks episodes because like Lower Decks is the place where like the studio executives care less. They're like, and like, so Mike McMahon and folks can sort of like get away with like doing the episode there. But like, and you'll get offhanded references in Picard or whatever. Like, here's my bet. I've already placed a bet of like, we'll get a reference to Jadzia Dax from Worf in Picard season 3, but he'll like only reference her obliquely as like his dead wife. Like, he won't say like her name. He'll be like, I once had a wife who died from blah, 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 blah. It'll be like an oblong reference so our Trekkies can like point at the screen and be like, oh, it's Jadzia Dax.
It's not enough.
You know what?
They've broken my heart too many times.
You know what the cruelest thing they could do would be? We go to DS9, but none of the original cast are there. It's just a whole range of other characters.
I would have a breakdown. It'd be fun, but I would be like, you fuckers.
It's really cruel. That's the sort of thing I'd do as a writer because I'd just be like, it's been 30 years. No one who worked there 30 years ago would still work there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it is a bit like hanging around your high school. Why would you still be there?
Yeah. And the reason you know that like they're never gonna, Paramount doesn't care about Deep Space Nine is they announced that comic book series.
Oh yeah.
Whereas like, they just announced a comic book series as an ongoing Star Trek series where the lead character is Sisko having come back from the wormhole. And they're like, this is supposed to be for the fans. And like, I'm actually, that comic looks really awesome. I'm excited for it. But you only know that got approved because like Paramount has zero plans to do anything with Deep Space Nine in the future.
I'm so in denial as well. Like, I'm upset, but like, could someone bring Sisko back?
Yeah.
Where is he? Where is Avery Brooks? I really Googled it the other day. I was like, I'm going to find him.
Avery Brooks, come back, please.
It's incredibly difficult to work out whether Avery Brooks doesn't want to work for Star Trek or has been told he can't work for
Star Trek. He has no like profile anywhere. I can't see. So he's not necessarily trying on his end. Like, you can make a Twitter at least.
Yeah, the last thing I remember seeing him in was like William Shatner did a documentary called The Captains where he interviewed all the captains of all the Star Trek shows up until Chris Pine. It was a decent documentary, but still managed to always be about William Shatner because of course. But the interviews were when they shown, there was like actually interesting stuff in there. But Avery Brooks in that documentary, like people like thought like when they watched it, like clearly, oh, Avery Brooks is having like a mental health breakdown. I watched that document because he's like weird. He's very weird in that interview. I watch it as and I'm like, oh, it feels more like he just realizes like, what is this fucking dude coming in? Oh,
he's
into
just fucking with William Shatner.
Yeah, and just like fucking around with him and just giving like the weirdest interview just to fuck with him. So like maybe there's something going on with Avery Brooks, but like my read on that was like he was just like, fuck William Shatner. I'll have him come, but I'm just gonna be a weirdo. He's like wearing a robe.
I quit Star Trek energy.
Yeah, like watch that interview. It's fascinating because he's like wearing a robe and he's like just in his house playing a piano. It's like very strange. It's like a very like weird energy. It's wonderful.
God save the king.
That's absolutely iconic.
That's the best.
I'm glad that we have a positive image to think about as we conclude.
You know, we haven't done the episode properly. I'm not going to do the trivia properly. We're not even going to discuss whether or not we're going to quit because I'm just going to write quit in the box on the spreadsheet. Do we want to do the trip nips, Olivia?
Is this trip nippable? What am I? This I don't is know. Is new Trek trip nippable? Oh, what, we did what? Give it some.
We did talk about. I mean, we kind of talked about Star Trek Picard season one as like a whole, and like it's nature and okay. It's indicative of nature of like Trek in this modern era.
The Pence as a concept, I think, is cursed because they fucking killed Hugh.
It's not fun. It's like
that's the thing. It doesn't have
the weird edge. It doesn't have the even like slightly fun, even though it crushed my soul edge. It doesn't even have that.
Well, what it has, the reason I picked it to want to talk about is it is this weird middle ground where like you see this, like you see an element of what like people, all of us kind of wanted to see, which is like an evolution of these characters in an intriguing way with like Riker and Picard. But then also it's like, oh, that's an interesting evolution. So it's like, there's kernels here. And there's also the kernel of the XB stuff. So there's like kernels of like interesting things here. But then you also see the cynical hand of the studios and the writers of it being like, oh, look, we're going to have our big TNG season 8 kind of cameo stuff. And we're also going to like have our trauma porn, and we're not going to like really wrestle with the tropes that we're going into with the barrier gaze stuff, the offhanded discarding of Hugh as a character, the disregard for our more interesting parts of our plot. And then also let's have our heteronormative family with Riker versus like the gay man who gets murdered. And so it's like this weird, like, piece in this middle of the season of Picard season one that I think is like indicative of what Picard could have been as like an interesting show. If like Picard was an interesting show, you can see the kernels of it here, but you also just see the cynical minded studio that just ruins it. And then there's the like cishet white boys, and to be fair, Michael Chabon is bisexual, but like you can still see that like sort of like male gazy, like we're being so big brained, like thought about this series that I think really lets it down. And then also you see like the dumb, like big brain stuff of like, ooh, we're gonna have the Romulan wear sunglasses because that'll like show that she's a Romulan because that's so smart. And then also we'll have her commit like or die by suicide or attempt suicide. So like we'll like show how trauma broke it is.
Me in a different
it's
way.
Like it's the sort of deranged thing that like the fundamental failure, I think, of a lot of writers of all tropes, fanfic writers, television writers. So sometimes a character is holding a spade because they need to dig a hole.
Mm-hmm.
Not because their dad got beat to death by a man with a spade, or they want to fuck the spade. Sometimes they just want to dig a hole, and sometimes they're digging that hole so they can fill it with water and like make a pond. Sometimes it's just a fucking spade.
Yeah, it's just this episode is indicative of everything that Star Trek, modern Star Trek, I think could do. And in some cases has done, like in Discovery or Strange New Worlds, Prodigy and Lower Decks. So I'm not like being like, oh, modern Star Trek sucks. But like this episode is showcases the kernels of what like could be done well. And then also all the cynicism and bad choices that also underscore modern Star Trek. So like this episode to me is like this interesting crux upon like the good and the bad of modern Star Trek. And this is coming from someone who likes a lot of modern Star Trek. So
a big NA then. I think that's it's I really agree with all of that. It's just I just don't I'm in the same headspace I am when we finish a Voyager episode, I'll be quite honest with you.
Yeah. It's the familiar crushed, tired feeling I'm trying to be with it. I'm also like always in these moments, I'm trying to give them a chance. I'm trying to think, what did they give me? There's a little nugget of goodness there. But I think I'd be happy to quit. I would be happy to quit. Yeah. So, yeah.
I would say the nugget of goodness is I do like Kestra Troy Riker. She is great.
She's great.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, I really hope we see more of her. We don't ever. We never will.
Watch, just you wait. Not even like she'll get a single line to reference in Picard season 3, and that'll be all we get of her. She'll get like, oh yeah, she's back on the planet. We had her with a babysitter, and that's like that's all we'll get of her.
Oh, fabulous!
They left her with
They
left her with like 20 microwave pizzas.
Yeah, notes. You know, she's like gonna make pizzas with the whatever the captain is that she references in this episode. We like left her with this captain, and that's all we'll hear about her. And it's like, no, the one good. part of this series you're just gonna just ignore, because it was so clear that Terry Metalis had zero interest in anything that Picard season one did, and just used season two to be like offload all of it so he could do season three.
Joy.
What joy?
Sarcasm. So,
oh, are we trip nipping it then?
No, we're not.
We just had a breakdown again.
I think we should do the high art. We should move on to the happier
part. Let's try and bring some positivity. And let's go to Olivia's high art list. This is my list of episodes that I think are the creme de la creme, the best of it all. I put, you know, Masks, of course. Spock's Brain, of course. Arena, of course. That episode of TNG where they're all wearing little bikinis in season one. That's going to be on there, of course.
Justice. You keep forgetting justice. It's called Justice.
Yeah, and it did that entire season Justice. But basically, this is a completely subjective list of episodes that I think are great, and you either win or lose. There is no guidance.
Oh, God.
So is there anything that you might want to submit to the high art list, and we'll see if our interests converge?
All right. Well, I will, since we've been hating on modern Star Trek, I'll stay in modern Star Trek, and I'll stay with live action Star Trek. Okay. Spock Amok from Strange New Worlds is the one that I would put out there.
That can be on the high art list.
Absolutely. Yes. I love that episode so much.
Is it's it already on here. It's already on
there. I was going to say, I think it's already on there.
It's already on the list.
Someone else has equally good taste. Yeah, I loved that episode. That's probably my favorite episode of Strange New Worlds, which I still haven't finished.
I love that episode.
John, I'm so sorry. The wind was knocked off my just knocked out of my sails. I can't continue.
I'm sorry. No. I've ruined the energy of the show.
No. I mean, the fact that I haven't continued watching Strange New Worlds, I haven't finished it.
I still like Stranger Worlds. There's only one episode of that season that I actively dislike.
I'm loving it, but I'm just like, you know what it is? It's Paramount, okay? Let's just blame Paramount. It's not going to do for the show itself.
Which episode don't you like?
The one that's supposed to be the when we walk away from Omula's one.
Oh, it's episode six. The one Olivia hasn't watched yet.
Am I still on that one? I might be.
Have you done the one with the kid yet?
Yeah. That's the one.
Have you done the one with the child yet?
No, there's no child, so I assume on that one.
No, yeah, you need to do the child one.
Without spoiling, the reason I just like that one is it's clearly meant to be a send-up, and I interviewed the writer about it. It's meant to be a send-up of Ursula K. Le Guin's seminal story, The Ones Who Walk Away From Omula's. And I get that, and I think that if it had been that, it would have been interesting, but I think the episode's a little bit too lost in like the mystery. It's like more interested in concocting a mystery around the plot rather than like exploring the moral implications of the story. It's not a bad episode. It's just I think the focus is wrong. So
yeah, that's what I said. I think I said that in my Trekker reviews. Is basically like there's an interesting debate. You know, it does the same thing as Cogenitor does, where it spends its whole time doing a mystery and not actually having the debate.
Yes, exactly. It's like once you get there at the end of the episode, it's interesting. But the whole episode itself is like getting to the interesting bit, and then it sort of ends. And it's like, oh, I wish you had like that. That would have been interesting to explore. You should have done that in the first 10, 15 minutes, and then we kept going forward. But whatever. Anyways, that's an aside. It's the only episode of that season that I'm like, I don't hate it. I'm just sort of like, it's the only one I don't really like. But no,
you shouldn't feel bad about the. This is part of the I Quit Star Trek tradition. Just saying that she feels bad that we brought the mood down, but that's part of it.
No, it's there's always there's a low point in every episode. We're just like, oh god, why do we like this? And then we do. Then we just like, you know what? What was it Mike said to us a couple of weeks ago? Just like, I love that you guys can just keep doing this.
Yeah. We're actually insane. Like, I'm so much worse than I could ever have imagined for being able to do this for this long.
I'm tempted actually for our second year anniversary to just have a line of like five guests talk to us about episodes they liked.
Yeah, we should be, something like, I think any sort of round table would be fun.
Well, I like this concept. I love the concept of this show because like, the thing that I like about Star Trek, even when I hate it, is, you know, I always argue Star Trek is my favorite franchise for two reasons. One, because of the ethos it has, and I love the characters in the universe and world, like the typical reason you love it. But the second one is, like, I also feel like it is such a great inroads to the conversation about how stories get made, how television gets made, how we think about stories. Because, like, you can look at Star Trek from in each era in which it was made and see all the problems of that era of television. It is indicative of all of it, and yet also it, like, the hopes, like, of what it, like, struggles to be at times, and, like, sometimes you get to see these, like, juicy moments of joy. And so, like, I and, like, modern Star Trek the same too. You see, like, the cynicism, the type of studio cynicism that's indicative of Hollywood right now, and then also some of the really beautiful stuff, like the fact that Discovery has so much diversity in it and, like, can push it forward. And so, like, I love this franchise because it is one that is so wholly imperfect that it just always allows for endless conversations about both its successes and its problems. So I think, like, talking about where you quit Star Trek is so, it's just as valid as where you love it. In fact, sometimes more valid, because it, I think, allows inroads to these conversations. Why do you, like, to plug something that I did, like, I have that Sex in Star Trek series that I do that's, like, 4 hours about, like, TNG or whatever. It's because, like, I love talking about where this series failed and where it succeeded, because I think that it's such an educational tool. So,
I know the most important part of I Quit Star Trek is we say, oh, fuck, that's terrible. And then we go, right, what are we doing next week?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we do it for 2 years now. I don't know how I'm still saying, but yeah.
You still have momentum somehow.
While I try to figure out which therapist I'm going to talk to about that, do you think to plug at all to our many, many? Hold on, let me check.
Don't give the real figure.
260 listeners. Well, it averages at about 340.
Oh yeah, no, that's amazing. That's actually really good for a podcast, to be fair. Especially a Star Trek podcast, since there's so many. But yeah, no, I mean, to plug my stuff, you can find me at Jesse Gender on the YouTubes. I do like video essay type stuff about LGBTQ issues in nerddoms and geekdoms, Star Trek in particular. For everyone in particular on this podcast, if you're looking for something that's similar to the vein of this conversation, I have two videos called Sex and Star Trek, one about the original series, one about the Next Generation. So really long explorations of kind of what we're talking about here, but from a sex, sexuality, gender, and race perspective, and sort of like looking at the positives and negatives of Star Trek. So I'd recommend those two videos. And then you can also, I have a secondary channel called Jesse Dinder After Dark, where I do reviews of every Star Trek episode and every and other TV shows coming out, like Star Wars Andor, which is amazing. And then I have two other podcasts that I do, one called Jumpgate, which is a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. So I have that. So you should check that out.
Maybe Olivia can listen to that once she's watched Babylon 5.
I can't
be being bullied like this.
I'll put John Van Sinners on you.
I'm getting back to it. J-Van is on me. Okay.
I'll put him back on you until you're.
We're gonna watch The Visitor 5. Soon, okay, J-Van?
Good. And then also a podcast called Sand Job, where we reread every issue of Neil Gaiman's The Sandman comic, as well as compare it to the TV show and the Audible audio drama adaptation as well. So
nice.
That's all my stuff. I do too many things.
That's okay. We all do. And if you want,
I'll be chilling.
All right. And if you want to bother us, you can find us at Quit Star Trek Pod, or email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com. We read our emails. Olivia read me an email today.
I am reading emails. Haven't looked at our DMs in a while, though, have we?
No, we haven't. you can buy our copyright-free merchandise at TeePublic.
Mm-hmm.
IQST on TeePublic. You can join our Patreon at patreon.com/IQST as well. I don't know why people give us money, but if you do, I love you. There you go.
And at this point, when they're listening, we will have done our first live show at the Science Museum.
If you were there, it was nice to meet you. I'm glad you came. I'm sorry that I didn't make any sense. Tripped over something. I probably did both of those things.
Or you killed it and were amazing. And just
amazing, but I probably still tripped over something.
I'm going to orchestrate some drama. Like, it's going to be like sort of reality TV, and I'm just going to reference that. No. I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah, to the person who punched Terry, Yeah, I'm sorry he offered you those eels, but he was trying to get to me first.
I'm gonna hire a stunt double.
To get punched by Terry.
Beautiful.
Anyway.
Get the listeners in somehow.
All right. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Jesse. This has been really, really fun.
Thank you for having me.
Spent most of it sort of sighing and staring despondently at the ceiling.
that's a fair reaction to any episode of Star Trek Picard.
Until next time, just write a proper series of television. Just write proper television.
And I, after all this, I still have so hope for season 3. I'm an idiot, okay? I'm an idiot.
I told you my conspiracy theory, so like there's hope, I feel like.
Yeah, but... like it has to be good, otherwise I'm truly gonna lose it.
Like let's redeem this in the final quarter. Yeah. Let's
hope. This feels like Snyder Cut. Snyder Cut. With Snyder Cut, it's gotta be good. It's not. It's not good, guys. And if you're listening to this after Picard season 3 came out and it was good, you're wrong, because I'm always right. Good night, everyone.
I can't believe when the Joker showed up and started saying like fuck you, Batman, like in the Snyder Cut. It was a surprising twist for Star Trek. Yeah.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.